and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
Pull up some dust and sit down.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I am deeply sorry for my irresponsible and selfish behavior I engaged in.
Pedro Fernandez.
My advice to you is to start drinking heavily.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, live, emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sport by Live Studios in San Francisco, California. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. 35, make that 36 plus years now of knocking out all bums, often imitated and damn reduplicated. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, of course. 2 hours today. This is the Sunday edition live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 211, like SB Nation Sports, and like a thousand other internet platforms. Bottom line is, we're kicking ass for the next 2 hours. The Godfather Larry Murch will be here in just a bit. Of course, the retired HBO Godfather, always trying to get some wisdom out of him. 89 years old and sharp as a tack. And get this, I throw questions at him like a dart at a dartboard. I just pull out a question, just throw it. Larry's ready to rock. So Larry will be here in a few minutes, and we'll spend some time with the retired HBO Godfather today. We'll also bring in a friend of mine that passed away in 2011. Of course, I'm talking about Genaro Hernandez, Chicanito, the former world champion, 130 pounds, 120. He was just a class act. I mean, I've never met a classier, nicer man in my entire life, let alone the world of boxing, than Genaro Hernandez. Of course, Genaro Hernandez passed away from cancer. So we've got the good, the bad, and the ugly of Genaro Hernandez. Of course, his last couple of interviews with myself in Ring Talk Live Worldwide back before he passed. Straight up, we've got Genaro today. We've got Larry today. We'll talk to the UFC, of course, boxing last night at ESPN. What can I say? I'm not all that impressed. At the end of the day, boxing is back to an extent, and I guess that is something good to talk about. The UFC rocked as well. We'll talk about that and more. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, baby. But if you didn't know it by now, what can I say?
Decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right. The World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Welcome back to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. If you're as confused as I am during this pandemic crisis, don't let your befuddlement take your eye off the ball, boxing fans. No, I'm not talking about boxing. Today is Father's Day 2020. Most of us will enjoy a day. Nice day, albeit social distancing style, but at the same time, we're all filling our guts with food and bubbly. There are countless people on the streets of the United States and San Francisco especially, and its neighboring cities, some of them fathers going through trash cans to eat. Open your eyes next time you're at a stoplight, and some guy might be construed as a vagrant. In fact, somebody who's really somebody's father who took a wrong turn somewhere. No, it's not my intent to bum you out this morning. I'm not trying to start the show in a negative, but to ignore and drive by starving people is what most of us do. People say, hey, Pedro, you know, you're an ex-San Francisco policeman. Why should we just arrest people laying on the sidewalk and put them in jail? No, making poverty a crime in the world's richest country was not what James Madison and company had in mind when they formed this country in the 1700s. Straight up, the homeless situation, we broke it down into a few different categories. Of course, the mentally challenged, the economically challenged, and of course, what can I say, people just don't want to be part of society. There is a portion of people like that. But being a former policeman and not just some tickets issuing civil servant, I led my watch in felony arrests quite often. I look around San Francisco and I see the filthy rich techies just step over and around people begging for food on the sidewalk. Hey man, that's absolutely killing. In closing, while the tech companies have brought great fortune to San Francisco, they and the people that run them, for the most part, bring with them the attitude that's all too familiar to me in San Francisco in 2020. For when it comes to rich people, if ever there was a time they needed to step up and pay people, it was right now. They need to recognize the homeless. Father's Day 2020, you're driving by somebody at one of those stoplights, guess what? Don't have to roll down the window a lot. Roll it down like a half inch or an inch and slide a $5 bill out the window. Make somebody's day. Father's Day 2020. Now, we take it from the city by the bay to Southern California, bringing the retired HBO godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant. A happy Father's Day to you, sir.
And back at you.
Trying to feed the hungry. Godfather, just trying to do my part to feed the hungry, man. I watch these people coming in here, and, you know, I live in San Francisco, and it's considered, like, the richest city in the world, or one of them, and I watch it on the way in. I mean, I could probably count 50 or 60 people on different street corners and stuff on driving in that are hungry and down and downtrodden, this kind of good stuff, and they're just being ignored.
Well, we have some of that down here as well. Lineup of bedraggled tents next to a military cemetery.
Oh,
and I don't know if they're veterans, but they've got a one-room tent.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny is that I said to a friend of mine, I said to him, and he doesn't realize how harsh he really is sometimes in his response, but I said to him, I said, you know, these tents are all over San Francisco, and he goes, you know, it's a good thing. I said, what do you mean it's a good thing? He goes, well, compared to sleeping on the sidewalk. No, the bottom line is people probably shouldn't be on the sidewalk in this city. You know, when I was a policeman, and I'll end it with this one, when I was a policeman in 1981, Mayor Dianne Feinstein, now the senator from the great state of California, she directed us personally as police officers working the midnight watch to count homeless people in the community in 1981. We had never done this, the police department had never done this before in 81 and 82, and there was all these homeless people like in mass on the streets of San Francisco, and they couldn't figure out why until we realized that good old Ronald Reagan closed down all of the federal mental hospitals and put these people on the street. So a lot of the folks that are on the street are just mentally ill and need medical help, Godfather. Again, the Affordable Care Act.
Well, I can vaguely recall that there was a movement to empty out those kinds of institutions on the theory that people would come around. I was kind of interested in that because when I was back in college, I wrote a series of articles on the state mental institution in town, Norman, Oklahoma. So I've always had a sort of sideline view of that world. It was a little naive putting the people out and hoping they would just acclimatize themselves, because some of them had real problems that transcended a good morning from the local cop.
You know, I worked in a barber college. My uncle ran a barber college here in San Francisco, and I worked in Skid Row as a kid, a real young kid, and I got to watch and I got to witness. Plus, my family had some drug issues, some alcohol issues, but I got to witness firsthand what alcohol does to people, and, like, it was a wake-up. I mean, Godfather, if you can't look at something and learn from history, and that's what's wrong with today's world, I think, is that, for the most part, we don't look back at history. Today's generation doesn't look back to history. Obviously, the president doesn't know anything about history, but they don't recognize history and what we can learn from history. I mean, I studied the pandemic flu. Do you think I wanted to study the 1918-1919 pandemic flu and the return of the flu? No, but I want to know what we were up against in this pandemic, so I studied that. But people don't study history. Why are people so afraid of history?
Because what goes on in the culture is very deep, and people don't want to fight against whatever their local culture is. And there are a lot of, how should I put it, stupid people out there in the world who never took advantage of the schools they were going to. And I don't know that how many of those schools were teaching stuff about what the country really was about. And I count myself among them. For example, Pedro, I was in Oklahoma for 4 years in college. I never heard of the Tulsa riots.
Whoa.
Which is one of the worst riots in history, when a very prosperous black neighborhood was torched and hundreds of black people were killed by, I suppose, jealous and undereducated folks.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Wilmington, North Carolina for 6 months as a sports editor of the paper there, and never heard of the huge riot they had had, oh, about half a century before I was there, because they didn't put it in history books for people to read. That's one of the real problems too. If you go to Texas, the history books are not going to tell you about the bad stuff that happened in Texas. And that's the way the education system works.
So in other words, I mean, I grew up on encyclopedias. I mean, I did. In other words, when I had a question or something like that, I went to a book. I went to the library, and I just don't think that. In a lot of that, when I went to the library and things like that, I would look back and history would tell me this is the way probably this should go. And I talk to people nowadays and I mention things in history like just 15 or 20 years ago, and they're like oblivious to it. They have no, huh?
Well,
I mean, they're.
Well, even forget history. How about things in popular culture? I've maintained for a long time how fleeting popular culture is, and I was in a restaurant with a few friends, and I said, let's talk to the waitress and the whoever comes over and ask them if they know who Bing Crosby was.
Mm-hmm.
they don't have a clue. He was a major star in America. And others we would mention who had once been, you know, headline makers. Mm-hmm. And so it goes. Now those people aren't the people who change history, but imagine, if people who were popular and well known in their time, outlive their well-knownness.
Good point. Little Bing Crosby story here. I was cutting hair. I used to be a barber. My uncle ran a barber college. But before I went to the police department, I was cutting hair in San Mateo, California at the Bay Meadows racetrack. And
cutting hair at the racetrack?
Yeah, cutting hair at the racetrack. And Bing, I was a barber. And Bing Crosby used to go in Petrini's across the street, the food market, right? And my buddy was selling fish in the market, Chris Booth, and he says to me, hey, that's Bing Crosby. Leave him alone. He don't like to talk to anybody. So you know what I did, Godfather, right? I went over right over and say, hey, Bing, Mr. Crosby, and my name is Pete. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, he wasn't the most friendly guy in the world.
Well, there are certain guys who live abnormal lives because they are so popular.
Good point. Larry Murch is our guest. You're tuning to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
There was a time when I was all alone. I had a secret. Thought I was gone. Somebody dumped me. Said, now I see what you were doing, brother.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
That is just a fact of life.
Well, you have to talk to my lawyer on that one.
40 years ago yesterday, the brawl in Montreal. Sugar Ray Leonard, Ray Charles Leonard, 27-0, WBC champion, 147 pounds, took that title from the equally great Wilfredo Benitez, of course, and of course he was defending that title against Roberto Duran. Duran coming in, one loss in 70 fights, straight up 70-1. Of course, Ray Leonard, 27-0. Something's got to go. 15 rounds later, one judge called 10 rounds even. Angelo Poletti of Italy, may he never work a fight ever again in his life, but he scored 10 rounds with a 15-round fight even. He had a 3-2-10 for Duran. The other judges had it for a point or two by Duran. Duran will win a unanimous decision. It was the peak of the career, I think, of the man with the hands of stone. Of course, he would come back and beat Iran Barkley for middleweight title, challenge Marvin Hagler and go 15 rounds, but still, I think June 20th, 1980 was a pinnacle point of Roberto Duran's career. Did you appreciate Duran as much as I did, or am I just blowing Duran too hard here?
No, I think he was among the best of the best of the best. And he moved up in weight from lightweight to welterweight to fight Ray Leonard, and it was such a good fight that both of them came out elevated. Duran for moving up in weight and beating Leonard, who was looking unbeatable, and Leonard for fighting back. You know, when he came out of the Olympics, Leonard had the reputation of being a kind of pretty boy, and not authentic as a fighter. And in that fight, the way he fought the late rounds, he authenticated himself. And then, of course, and I'm sorry you left this out, in the rematch, 6 or 8 months later, Duran quit. No mas.
Uh-huh. And the reason why I was going to get to that in extent, and I'll, you know, the no mas fight, I know a little bit about the inside of that. I think Duran was on the verge of being knocked out. He didn't want to get knocked out. Of course, he had went to Don King before the fight and says, I'm not ready. And Don King says, if you don't take the fight, if you're not ready, if you're not going to be there November 25th, the fight's off. You're not going to get it. And of course, it was an $8.5 million purse. Duran would have cut off his arm to get there. He quit that fight. But the comeback fight, you know, the fact that he was able to come back and he beat Cuevas, but that wasn't all that great down there in L.A. at the sports arena. But he came back and he beat Davey Moore. He was an underdog and he beat Davey Moore. Of course, Davey Moore, vastly inexperienced. But he beat Davey Moore, went 15 rounds with Marvin Hagler. I mean, I think he, and then he beat Iran Barkley. And, of course, Barkley had knocked out Hearns. Hearns had knocked out Duran. I think he sort of redeemed himself, no?
Look, in the overall picture of Duran's career, he was a great fighter.
Okay.
And yes, maybe that embarrassment in the rematch triggered something in him for the rest of his career. He was proud and loud, and he did, I think you can rightly say he redeemed himself, but that was such an unusual thing for a great fighter to do in that rematch.
No doubt about that.
It stained his career.
Without a doubt, because that's what people bring up when I bring up Duran, they bring up No Mas. You know, what happened in that fight, and Ray Leonard confirmed this in print recently, was that Roger Leonard had called Duran an MF, and he ran across the ring at Duran, and Duran knocked Roger Leonard cold. Cold.
When did he run across the ring? When did that happen?
After the before the decision was announced.
Oh, I see.
But he got clocked. Bang! One punch, and Ray said he just went out.
Ray and his team were very shrewd in getting the rematch six months after the original fight.
Yeah,
because by that time, it was known that Duran had a hard time getting in superior condition twice in a row.
Well, that was without a doubt. And of course, they, Mike Traynor was Ray Leonard's attorney out of Landover, Maryland, Washington D.C. area. And he sent a spy down to Panama. This is what he told me. And we're in June of 80, May of 89, we're in Palm Springs, West Palm Beach together. And he said to me, he goes, you know, I sent a spy down to Panama, a friend of mine. He goes, yeah, I sent him down there on vacation for a week. He goes, and he sort of followed Duran on, ran around. He goes, and Duran was like 210 pounds. And he got, and he came back, and Mike Turner says, now I'm going to make the move. I'm going to offer him such an incredible amount of money that he can't turn it down, and he's going to have to bust his ass to make the weight. And, you know, they, as you said, shrewd, shrewd guys. Mike Turner, one of the smartest guys to not be a part of the boxing world.
Yeah, he came in from an outside lawyer's perspective, knowing that he had a hot property, and did a very good job with Ray.
You know what he told me, Godfather? I'll never forget this. He's kicking back. He's got a cigarette in his mouth. His feet are up in the air, and he says to me, he goes, how tough could this be? He goes, you rent an arena? He goes, you put a ring in it? He goes, and you tell him Sugar Ray Leonard's going to fight. He goes, people are going to show up. And he was right.
Well, he was right about Leonard. I mean, Leonard was a star coming out of the 76 Olympics in Montreal. And he had the look of a star, and he had there was a certain flash and dash about him. And he proved to be a star.
Well, without a doubt, and of course, we're talking about the 40-year anniversary of Duran Leonard 1, or Leonard Duran 1 yesterday, of course. He showed the intestinal fortitude coming down the stretch. I mean, he took some of those shots, right-hand leads and left hooks and body shots and this and that would have folded anybody else. I mean, talk about showing intestinal fortitude. Sugar Ray Leonard, wow, he really showed it, of course, 40 years ago yesterday. And, of course, he would hit the zenith of his career in April of 1987, of course, when he beat Marvin Hagler on a 12-round decision. I still think that was another smart move business-wise, getting Marvin to fight 12 rounds instead of 15, and then, of course, getting the size of the ring and the gloves and that kind of good stuff. And, of course, I think that Marvin sold his title, but you've got a different opinion on that, right?
Sold his title?
Well, I mean, come on. He gives up the rounds. He gives up from 15 to 12 rounds. He gives
that
up.
Wait. Which fight were we talking about?
Marvin Hagler and Ray Leonard. Marvin gave up the
title. Oh, well, look, I think I have a different view of that fight.
I love this. Go on.
Marvin Hagler was jealous and envious of Sugar Ray Leonard. Hagler had to come up the hard way. He had to fight all those killer middleweights in Philadelphia. It was never an easy road. Where Leonard sort of shot out of the 76 Olympics into prominence, into being a star. And once upon a time, Hagler said to me, you're going to see me outbox Sugar Ray Leonard someday.
Wow. So he
And he came into that fight for two or three rounds. He fought from a left-handed style just to try to befuddle Ray Leonard. But what it did was it allowed Leonard to get into the fight and allowed the crowd to show the emotion of the moment. And by the time Hagler decided that he had to do more fighting, he had given up a number of rounds.
And it was all over. Godfather, it's happy Father's Day to you. Say hello to the Godmama for me. Scott Cuddy said she answered the phone this morning. So tell her Pedro says hello.
Hello and goodbye, Pedro.
All the best to you, sir. Hello and goodbye. The great Godfather, the Hall of Famer, Larry Merchant. Aren't we blessed to have him in each week? Thank you so much, Godfather, for your presence. You tune to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Here comes the decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Would it bother you much if I worked a little longer?
Just pull the door closed when you leave.
Thank you.
If there's magic in boxing, it's the magic of fighting battles beyond endurance, beyond cracked ribs, ruptured kidneys, and detached retinas. It's the magic of risking everything for a dream that nobody sees but you.
Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, Ground Zero, baby, when it comes to combat sports radio. Of course, 35, make that 36 plus years now of being often imitated but never duplicated. Right now, live on Twitch.tv, of course, the Sports Byline channel. The show is coming to you live. It's also, we're airing the video of the Roberto Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard first fight, of course, June 20th, 1980. What can I say? 15 rounds of hell. Give it to both guys. It was the greatest fight I think I've ever seen for two men at the top of the game going back and forth. June 20th, 1980, the brawl in Montreal. June 20th, 1975, of course, we're talking about his story by our house historian, Grandmaster Billo. Ruben Olivares is too much for Bobby Chacon. Of course, Chacon, a head case if there ever was one, winning the WBC version of the featherweight title. Of course, he had lost the WBA portion to the great Alexis Arguello the prior November. And speaking of November, I take that back. Again, June 20th, 1980, Duran, of course, in that chilling. It was just chilling. He came into the fight looking possessed like Charles Manson. And, of course, at the end of 15 rounds, he was a winner. And according to our house historian, he won by a score of 144 to 143, which I thought was a bit too close. And on June 20th, 1981, my buddy, man, I miss this dude. And if I think about him too much, my eyes will get watery. The great Alexis Arguello. Right, Alexis Arguello wins his third world championship in three different weight classes. Of course, his last championship fight win, June 20th, 1981, in London, adding the WBC lightweight crown to his collection of titles. Of course, it was at the Empire Pool at Wembley Stadium in London, England. And man, I really miss that dude. He was something else. We talked about, I guess, about less than 3 weeks before he died. And we were talking on the phone. He was talking about the fact that he had entered into the world of politics. He was telling me about people wanting to feed hungry people. You know, we both had this thing about wanting to feed hungry people, me and Alexis. So he was the mayor of Managua, Nicaragua at the time. And, you know, he told me, he was like all positive and happy. And here's what's funny. I've talked to Alexis when he's been depressed. You guys have heard him on the show in the past when he was depressed. And he wasn't nowhere near sounding depressed. So when he sort of allegedly took his life 3 weeks later, I said to myself, bull spit with an H. That's just the way it went down. But Alexis Arguello won his last championship fight June 20th, 1981 in London, England. Of course, he would have some non-title fights at 140 pounds and then challenge the great Aaron Pryor, of course. The first fight taking place in Miami going 14 rounds, Arguello being stopped, of course, landing that horrific, that incredible right hand in the 13th round. Probably one of the greatest punches ever thrown. And Pryor just ate it up. I mean, he just ate it up because of the fact that he was a bigger man. Forget all the drugs and all that kind of good stuff. And I'm not saying he wasn't on drugs. I'm not saying his gloves weren't loaded that night. I'm just trying to tell you that he was a bigger man physically than Alexis Arguello as far as across the body is concerned. He was able to take those punches where somebody else wouldn't. So straight up, our hats off to the great Alexis Arguello. Now, switching gears. Boxing took place last night in Mexico City. No surprise, folks. Guess what? WBO junior featherweight champion, a man I've called the greatest fighter in all of Mexico. Well, He's ticking me off, and I could have used another word, but I threw tick in there at the last minute. Emmanuel Baguero Navarrete Martinez, that's his last name, Martinez, 32-1 and 28 KOs, fought a guy on television that was 13-13. Come on! He is the WBO 122-pound champion, the World Boxing Organization 122-pound champion. This fight was at like 125, 126 pounds, something like that. It was a little over the weight. But still, you want to... I mean, I'm not saying that Uriel Uyuka Lopez was a bum. I'm not saying that. I'm trying to say this. There's a disparity in class here. I mean, come on, man. Guys 13-13, you put him in with like one of the best fighters in the world, or allegedly one of the best fighters in the world, 32-1, 28 KOs, of course, promoted by Top Rank of Bob Arum. Bob Arum will say in a couple of minutes, he's the best fighter in all of Mexico and all that kind of good stuff. Yeah, well, if you're the best fighter in all of Mexico, why would you put him on television against a guy that's 13-13? And why would you move him up in weight right now? He's fought 8 times in the last like 16 months or something like that, so he probably hasn't had too much of an issue in making weight. He's a young kid. He looks lean. Okay, there's no fat on him. Okay, so why not put him in a real fight? No, they put him in with a guy that's 13-13. So if Bob Arum keeps doing this kind of stuff, keeps putting this crap on TV, keeps putting this spit on TV, and spit with an H, I say it's time to boycott ESPN. It's time to give back. Tell ESPN Plus, guess what, man? You know, the $5 a month that I'm paying for this, and I don't want it anymore. It's not worth it. Not for the boxing. Not if you're going to show me like infomercials. That's what these are. Boxing infomercials. Hey, look at Shakur Stevenson. He's fighting Scott Cuddy. Oh boy. Come on. That was a rival barn burner last week, wasn't it? No. Okay. That was the first weekend of boxing coming back after this pandemic. This coronavirus pandemic ban or boycott or of course all the whole sports world came to an end. The whole world came to a stop there for a little bit. But the bottom line is these are the first fights coming back. So you put crap on television? Bob, man, I really listen. Bob Arum has always been one of those guys that wants to push the can down the road. What I mean by that, by push kicking the can down the road. In other words, he doesn't want his guy fighting the guy in this fight. He wants to make money off this fight and then move on to the next fight. He's always thinking about the next fight. I guess that's the way a successful promoter has to be. Okay. But at the end of the day, what about these other guys at 122 pounds that Mr. Navarrete, you know, cause I've been blowing this guy. I mean, basically, I'm blowing this guy on the radio for months. I mean, I knew he was a real deal. I mean, I watched him on YouTube, and he's basically these fantastic fights, and he was fighting in Mexico, and he's fighting guys that, you know, not the greatest fighters in the world, but he showed me some skills, and the fact that he's got that nice torso where, you know, he can move, he's beautiful as far as his upper body is concerned. Anyway, 122 pounds is where he belongs, of course. Now they want to move him up to 126 or 130 pounds. Why? I don't understand. I can't understand why. The junior featherweight division, 122 pounds, is rocking and rolling. They call it super bantamweight. Call it what you want. But I'll run off some records here for you at 122. And, of course, people say to me, oh, anything less than 126 pounds, man, like Larry Merchant doesn't get all the interest in it. Navarrete, 31-1, of course, fighting the stiff last night. Ray Vargas is 34-0. What's up, man? Let Ray's from Mexico. Let's hook it up, the two Mexicans. Why is Emmanuel Navarrete moving up in weight instead of fighting Ray Vargas? Okay, he beat Isaac Dogbo, and he dogged him. Not once, but twice. I sort of predicted that when people say to me, hey, man, you know, your guy's like a 5-1 underdog. Are you out of your mind, a 4-1 underdog? No, no, no. He dropped down to about a 3-1 underdog because people bet money on him as Navarrete routed Isaac Dogbo the first time, and then he, like, blitzed him the second time. Anyway, so many other guys at 122, Brandon Figueroa, you know, so what, 20-0. But outside of this guy, Vargas, man, Vargas is where it's at. I mean, he's a champion in 122 pounds of another sanctioning body. Of course, Navarrete being the WBO champion. And now Bob Arum moving him up in weight, which leads me to believe that they think he's not the real deal. So in other words, when you hear Bob and he's the greatest, we'll play that clip going to the break. He's the greatest Mexican fighter of all time. Yeah. No. He may not be. He may not be. And the fact that you're moving him up in weight and fighting guys that are 13-13 are indicative of that. No doubt about that. Something is amiss with Mr. Emmanuel Navarrete. Now, last night, the UFC rock and rolled. Of course, the UFC and Dana White, the piece of spit that he is. And I say spit on this show, I mean spit with an H. You know I don't like him. I just don't. I mean, I never, listen, it has nothing to do with any business dealings or anything like that. He's just an a-hole. He just is. I mean, that's a compliment. And I'm not trying to knock people that are considered that in the world, because some people are considered good a-holes, but he's not. He's just a piece of work. He is the pimp of all pimps. I mean, I told you last week, some of those people that fought on the ESPN card, guy got knocked out in 39 seconds. Guess what? He made $11,000. So he had to lock himself down in quarantine for a couple of weeks. He had to train for 6 or 8 weeks, okay? And he gets $11,000. Guess what? $11,000. Your manager is going to take 30%. Trainer is going to take 10%. Okay, cut man's going to take 3%. Okay, you got to pay, you got to eat. Your wife and kids have got to eat. You got a family. What's happening with them? Some of that money's got to go there. At the end of the day, you can't make a living fighting in the UFC. It is a whole situation, and they're getting paid worse than crack hoes. Because I'm telling you, there's not a crack hoe in the city of San Francisco, and I was a cop for a while, okay, working them down there in the Tenderloin. There's not a working girl in the city and county of San Francisco that will work for 20 cents on the dollar, or 10 cents on the dollar, or 8 cents on the dollar. It's somewhere between 8 and 18 cents is what they're copping to. I heard Jorge Masvidal, of course, the hottest fighter, 170 pounds, having beaten Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor. I mean, he is the real deal, no doubt about it. Tough dude, backyard fighter, started off with Kimbo Slice on the YouTube tapes and that kind of good stuff. But he basically says, I'm willing to give up a title shot in order to make my statement here. And the statement is that the UFC needs to pay these fighters. I keep telling you that. They're running pay-per-views now, okay? If they're running pay-per-views and they're running these pay-per-views with ESPN and it's a split with ESPN, you know, if they do... supposedly do $5 million in pay-per-view money. That's $2.5 million. The fighters aren't seeing that. Fighters want a percentage of that. Dana White will say to you, oh, well, you know, the fighters get a percentage of the pay-per-view if they sell pay-per-views. But the bottom line is, you make it so they really can't sell pay-per-views, because you put them in deathmatch after deathmatch, and you can't last that long unless you're vastly superior. And only a few people are vastly superior to that. You get caught with an elbow, you get kicked in the head, things ain't too good. Okay, the world of mixed martial arts, I think right now, controlled by Dana White, is it's beyond the world of pimps and hoes. It just is. And Dana, of course, spouting this Fight Island, this thing. He worked, you guys. He said he was going to put on some Fight Island. He was going to have, like, the octagon, and people were going to fight on the beach and this and that. He's doing this in some hotel and casino in Dubai. Doesn't sound like a Fight Island to me, but what it sounds like is a piece of work brought on by Mr. Dana White. Last night, Dana White had a card in Las Vegas, of course, at that little arena they got, that USC arena. Curtis Blaydes in the main event beat Alexander Volkov. Not the most exciting fight in the world, but Blaydes looked like he was in better shape than he had been in the past. Of course, Volkov, pretty good fighter, came to fight, but most of the fight he spent on his ass. He just was sitting on his butt the entire time. This guy's just like click-clocking him. Anyway, Blaydes a winner. Unanimous nod across the board, 48-46, which means 3-2 in rounds. 48-47, 49-46. Bottom line is, he won going away on the scorecards. Alexander Volkov was standing in the end, and that, I was surprised about that. Josh Emmett in a featherweight fight beat Shane Burgos for a decision. Rest of the fights went to a decision in the main card, except for one. Raquel Pennington was a winner over Marianne Ranou. Bele Muhammad beat Laman Good. What can I tell you? These guys are all big-name guys. These are future Hall of Famers. Of course, you've heard all about them before. No, you haven't. The one has been on the card that I have heard about before, the cowboy Jim Miller. He was a winner. I can't believe this guy won a fight finally. He hasn't won a fight since, like, Bill Clinton was president. Anyway, in a catchweight fight at 160, Jim the Cowboy Miller defeated Roosevelt Roberts with a submission armbar in the very first round. You are tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, the American Forces Network. I keep going and going, but the bottom line is, this tune we're listening to right now is recorded in the basement of a house on West Grandview Boulevard in Detroit, Michigan. Hitsville, USA. Stevie Wonder, the break on Ring Talk, live worldwide. Now I'm wondering.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
You know, I've been to 34 countries, and yet one of the greatest men I ever met was in South San Francisco, California. He celebrated a birthday this week. I'm talking about Espedito Martinez. Mr. Martinez is what I call him. He used to tell me, call me Espedito, Pete. No. It was always Mr. Martinez. Mr. Martinez, happy birthday to you. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, we are live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline channel. And we are showing, the monumental 15-round fight between Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran, June 20th, 1980. We're showing all 15 rounds, no commercials, live on the Twitch TV. Of course, that's you can watch the video and listen to the show at the same time. Roberto Duran and Sugar Ray Leonard hooking up are probably one of the most competitive fights for 15 rounds in the history of boxing. Without a doubt, I thought it was the best against the best at the best time. June 20, 1980, a magical day in the world of boxing. You are tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing, MMA. Hey, before I went to the break, I said that Stevie Wonder did that song, and it was Science of the Liver, but that was Peter Frampton. Peter Frampton, I said, yeah, Peter Frampton, not exactly a Motown artist, but I saw him a couple of years ago. He's supposed to be doing a retirement tour, but man, he blew Steve Miller off the stage. He was an amazing guitarist, amazing vocalist, Mr. Peter Frampton. One more tour, right on, Peter. Go do your thing. This is Ring Talk, live worldwide, hour number one of two, of course, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211, and a plethora of other internet platforms, including SB Nation Sports. And hour number two, I will bring you the good, the bad, maybe the ugly of life to an extent. We'll talk with Genaro Hernandez, of course, the late Genaro Hernandez. He passed away from cancer. We'll talk with him, one of his last interviews before he got sick, and I'll take that back, after the chemo. Anyway, it's emotional. We'll spend some time with a classy young man, a man that I truly miss, in Genaro Hernandez, in hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide on SportsByline.com, iHeartRadio, and Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 211. This is hour number one. Hour number two will be better of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Stay tuned after the news.